escort service for all the right reasons and set up shop at the top of Four Seasons. Kid Rock, and I'm the real McCoy, and I'm headed out west, sucker, because I wanna be a cowboy, baby,
with a top left back and the sunshine shining.
Cowboy, baby,
west coast chilling with the moon's
wine. I wanna be a cowboy, baby,
riding at night cause I sleep all day.
Cowboy, baby,
I can smell a pig from a mile away.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 71. No reviews, just analysis. I'm Aaron Myers, and my co-host, as always, is Andrea Shockling. Up this week, two comics from January 14th, 2015, Copperhead number 5 and Star Wars number 1. In between segments, listen to another second opinion, and just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
Hey guys, this is James Kaplan, SinisterJHK on Twitter. I'm an avid comics reader, and I also write about comics for Panel Patter. I'm sure that I read comics when I was a little kid, like Disney or Archie or Richie Rich comics, but the first comic I really loved, and the one that got me hooked on reading comics, was Transformers number 1 in the spring of 1984, when I was 8. There were cars and planes and guns that turned into robots, and they were hiding among us. It was probably the coolest thing I'd ever seen up until that point. So that's the book that really got me started reading comics regularly.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. This week's theme is epic space westerns! It's not even an intentional cop-out because of Star Wars. I mean, honestly, I've been wanting to talk about Copperhead for a couple of months. And so when I asked Aaron what else fit with that theme, he reminded me that another small independent book featuring roguish bravado in space was also out this week. What is our fascination with the Wild West, and why does it work so well to translate it to the final frontier? Each episode in between comic segments, you'll hear one listener answering a series of questions, sharing his or her favorite comics, creators, and more. We call it a second opinion. This week's listener is James Kaplan, at SinisterJHK on Twitter. James is a contributor to Panel Patter and a great lover of comics and science fiction. If you'd like to play along at home, you can leave your own response for us to use on a future show. The prompts are on the website, comicstherapy.com, and you can call, Skype, or email your MP3. Remember to read comics responsibly, kids, and always get a second opinion.
I'm happy to read comics digitally. I like that format just fine, but I really prefer print. First, I think because print comics are larger than the screen or the tablet, and secondly, because I just prefer looking at paper. I also really love my local comic shop, The Outer Limits, in Waltham, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. It's got a great selection, the owner's a super nice guy, and I really like the community of friends that I have at the shop.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter at Aaron Myers and Andrea at Andrea Shock. The show account is at Comics Therapy.
How's your week been?
It has been fine, I guess.
Anything exciting to note?
Just preparation.
For?
Things coming up. Wizards World Portland.
You're having a lot of trouble with words today. Are you going to be okay?
I have a lot of trouble with words every week.
True. Very true. So you dropped a little bit of a bomb when you said you were going to take Luke up to the con. How's that going to work?
Well, I'll go 2 days. He can come with me the first day, and we'll see how long it lasts. And then the second day, I'll go back and do stuff that I want to do.
Is this his first official con?
Well, the first one he was at, he was too young to be aware of the world around him.
Okay, so yes.
Mm-hmm.
Does he know what to expect? Like, what do you tell a 4.5-year-old who is not, I don't know. How do you prep him for this?
I guess I just talk about, like, people walk around in costumes. Like, that's why I think Wizards World is a good con for him to go to.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of cosplay, you know, there's a lot of, like, celebrity guest stuff.
Got it.
So it'll be more just, like, kind of sightseeing.
Do they do a kids area?
I There are kids things. Yeah, I mean, in the past, it's not stuff I really paid attention to, those areas. So it's something I'll have to look for more this time.
Because you'll have a kid with you.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I really don't expect it to be like, it's a 2-hour drive to get there, which he'll be fine in the morning. He'll be fine with that. And then I bet we'll be there for maybe like 2 hours at the most.
Make sure that you take some snacks for him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, that's half of my backpack will be like water and snacks and change of clothes and everything else.
Oh, no wonder you have to go back a second day. There's no room for comics.
No, and there's no point. You know, like we'll walk around maybe, but I think he'll be bored if we would have just walked around like Artist Alley.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's not that interesting.
When you're four.
When you're four. Right. So it'll be just like go to the cosplay area, go to the cosplay, you know, whatever contest. And
I think this is going to be good for you. Really. I think that branching out and dealing with a con in a different way, like outside of your comfort zone, is really, really good for you. Honestly, that's why I feel like Emerald City is also going to be really good for you.
Yeah, Emerald City already feels like a waste to me, but I've
a waste? What are you talking about? It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, but I'm not going there preparing like I have in the past for a convention.
Why not? You certainly could. Just because we're all going to be there doesn't mean you have to talk to us.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not autistic. I understand that
Aaron Myers, that was one of the most offensive things you've ever said.
That I'm not autistic?
Yeah.
But it's true. I don't believe I am.
Just the implication that would be some sort of, like, allowance for your behavior choices. The comparison to antisocial behavior and, you know, an individual on the spectrum doesn't necessarily, it's like not a golden rule.
True, but there are traits of autism that are associated with inability to connect or understand other people.
Absolutely. Whereas you are just an asshole.
So I'm attempting to both avoid those aspects and also any of the spectrum aspects that I might be inclined to embrace.
Oh, man. This is going to make or break us, I think.
I guess.
I feel like
you're putting way too much weight on it.
Really? Truly? Because I feel like we're okay now when we see each other in person. Like, we've got sort of enough experience with that so that it's not super awkward and you don't want to murder me 100% of the time. But being around other people also in a social comics setting is potentially a recipe for disaster.
Potentially. I'm not really worried about it, though, because I don't feel like Emerald City, where I'm going to be like your primary point of conventioneering.
Conventioneering? Is that what you said? You mean like I'm not going to want to hang out with you very much?
Not as much as other people that are going to be there.
Bingo! That's going to save the day right there. Oh, that guy over there. That's Aaron Myers. I do a show with him. Yeah, I'll go this way. You can go say hi to him. It's going to be brilliant.
Okay. See? So there you go.
You know I'm kidding, right?
No.
Oh, Aaron, don't make that sad sound. No, it's going to be great. Like, I really think that it's going to be fun and that you will get a lot of comics stuff accomplished. Because that con, as a comics-focused con, is intense and awesome and right up your alley. But I do think that the social stuff and the opportunity to hang out with all of our friends in one place is going to be really excellent. Truly.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun. I think it'll maybe be like what Rose City, just a even bigger version of like what I did at Rose City, where during the day I still did my convention stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the convention closed and, you know, then people can hang out or something.
I'm going to help you. You're going to get through this and it's going to be fun.
Right? But that's how it works.
Yeah.
I know you don't go with the same sort of like, and I'm intentionally trying not to like bring the packets of things anymore for signatures and
Well, you've gotten stacked. Pretty much everybody, right?
No, there's lots of people. You know, for me, like, still the signature is still an icebreaker. Like, I feel super uncomfortable going up to somebody's booth without something to hand them.
Okay, but you are better at that now.
I'm better, but I still like that. You know, I like, here, I bought this, you know, thing you worked on.
I just mean, like, the better with the talking and the people. And
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good job. The level of, like, apprehension or just, like, unknown around a convention has gone away.
Good.
Like, you know kind of what to expect. But Emerald City's kind of different because it's Seattle. It's not Portland.
Right.
Like, I'm very used to going to the Portland Convention Center and going to the conventions there.
Do you have a place to stay yet?
Nope.
Are you worried about that?
Not really.
Are you going to sleep in your car?
I don't think so.
I don't want you to sleep in your car. I'll feel bad if you sleep in your car.
No, I think there are places to stay. They might not be that close.
Okay.
But, you know, if it's 20 blocks away, is that really that big a deal?
No.
Yeah. So there are, like, still lots of places to get. Would you just not drive right in? I would probably drive to wherever I was staying, and I'll just take a cab or Uber or something.
Mm, okay.
I know how to use technology.
You do.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big boy. I can have somebody drive me around.
Okay.
I know how cities work.
So, what are you worried about?
About for Emerald City?
Yeah.
Here are things I'd be worried about. If I'm making the commitment to social interaction, there are a lot of people that I would feel that I would want to and need to socially interact with. And ultimately...
Wait. Hold on. Let me just translate for you guys. What Aaron just said is... he wants to see as many friends as possible. That's what he means. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And, yeah, but keep going. That's what I've found is very difficult. Because it'll be like, oh, I'm over here. Oh, we're over here. And then I'll be like, well, I'm in the middle, so how about I just see nobody?
Oh, no. No, we'll just do a couple big, like, lunches or gatherings in the evening or something
But not all your friends are my friends.
Wow.
I've got all kinds of groups.
Wow. I'm hurt.
It's not my... I talk you up. It doesn't mean everyone likes you.
Wow.
Look, you go down this road, you start finding out the truth.
That you're an asshole.
Well, I'm just saying there is a group of people who I feel very close to who have a lot of interesting criticisms about half of how this show is run.
Got it.
You know, they're a strong and vocal minority... Who I share and agree with a lot of their opinions.
Why don't you hang out with them all weekend then?
Maybe I will.
Maybe you will. You want to talk about comics?
I guess. Nothing about your week you want to talk about?
I worked a lot. A lot. After Chase was in town through Saturday. So we went to the Chip Zdarsky signing at Good Vibrations. And... went out after that and had a really good night. Had a lot of fun.
Are there no details of the signing you want to convey?
Seems
like it was a funny event.
It was. It was actually a very... I hesitate to use this word just because of what it was. But it was a very intimate signing in that it was not overrun with people. And because they couldn't announce it ahead of time since he was a surprise guest. There was concern that there wouldn't be a lot of people in attendance, but there was. It just wasn't overwhelming, and he was gracious and hilarious with everybody who was there. And Good Vibrations is an excellent sex toy shop. If anybody is in San Francisco, there are two locations, one downtown and one in the Mission, and I highly recommend it. The staff there was awesome. Dealing with, like, all of these people who were in there kind of awkwardly laughing at the merchandise and also there to see a comic book writer and artist. Like, it just was a meshing of two worlds that doesn't always find itself in such close quarters. But everybody was really chill and it was a lot of fun. And we headed to a different shop after that. We went to a couple of parties. We went to a bar over on Hayes and hung out with a bunch of other friends and had a good, like, final night with, you know, Chase being in town. in San Francisco. So it was excellent.
Sounds like a very adult and nerdy time that you had.
Yeah. Craft beer and taquerias and comic books and sex toys.
I mean, perfect.
It really, when you put it like that, it was fucking spectacular. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I've just been working straight since then. So I'm tired. I slept in until 7 this morning. It was awesome.
I was woken at 1 a.m. this morning by a sleepwalking 4-year-old who thought zombies were chasing him in his dreams.
Wait, I didn't know that Luke sleepwalks.
He doesn't.
Oh, that's a new development?
Yeah. Yeah, so that was fun.
I'm sorry. That's awful.
He was still pretty much asleep when that. He remembered it almost like as a dream when he woke up in the morning. So it's never a dull moment around here.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, that's life in the Myers house.
And then Wizard World Portland is next weekend, right?
It is next weekend. Cool. So he wants to dress up as the Flash. We'll see how long he wants to keep that on for.
Does he have one already?
No, we ordered one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Kids in cosplay are, like, often one of my favorite parts about cons like that, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it'll be fun, but I don't, at the same time, it's like, if he gets, and he's like, I want to take this off, that's why I want to have a change of clothes, you know? Mm-hmm. As prepared as I would be normally for a convention with all the comics stuff, you have to be equally prepared for kid contingencies.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, we'll see how it goes.
By the time I talk to you next week, I'm sure that you'll be, like, extra stressed out about it. So I'm looking forward to that.
The thing is, I don't think I'm going to get that stressed out about it because they're gracious enough to give me a press pass. So there's not a lot of, like, monetary investment.
Got it.
So it's not like, oh my God, we spent, you know, $100 and I have to, you know, we have to make the most of this or something. So it's easier to just kind of come and go. And I'm trying to be very realistic about any kind of anything when it comes to children and how you can't, any agenda you might have will probably not take place.
So I just come back to what I said before. This is good for you on multiple levels. I'm proud of you, Aaron Myers.
Thanks. I'm like an adult, like a father or something.
Sort of. Mm. Want to talk about comics on the internet now? Because that's super adult.
Sure, let's do that.
There are a lot of comics that I love, and so it's not easy for me to say that any one series is my favorite, but I'll go with East of West from Image Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman, illustrated by Nick Dragotta, with colors by Frank Martin. I love everything about this book. It's epic sci-fi fantasy, alternate history, apocalyptic religious drama. It's got just the sort of complex narrative I've come to love and expect from Jonathan Hickman, where everyone has ulterior motives and plans within plans, and your most sympathetic character in the story is Death of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. The art on the book is just stunning. Dragotta portrays both quiet moments and intense action and drama incredibly well, with fantastic layouts and sequentials. And the colors from Frank Martin are big and bright and larger than life, and they really work great for the story.
Our first book this week is Copperhead No. 5, written by Jay Farber, with art by Scott Gawoski. Colors are by Ron Riley, and lettering is by Thomas Maurer. Copperhead is published by Image Comics.
I'm going to read the recap in issue 5. It's pretty succinct and gives you anything that you need to know if you're not reading this book, but, like, why aren't you reading this book? Because it's pretty awesome. New Sheriff Clara Bronson's first case in the town of Copperhead isn't going well. An entire family was massacred, leaving just 2 survivors, Mrs. Sewell, who was in police lockup at the time, and one of her sons, Cletus, who's still in the doctor's office clinging to life. Clara's prime suspect in the attack is a mysterious artificial human named Ishmael, who lives outside of town in the Badlands. He was spotted with the Sewell's family, Swavash? I don't know how to say it, but
That's how I would read in my mind.
Sure, but maybe without the question at the end. It's a sacred jewel. Despite Deputy Boo's warning, Clara has headed deep into the Badlands at night in search of Ishmael. So what I especially love about the recaps is that there is nothing, at least now in this issue, there's nothing that screams, by the way, half of these characters are what we would consider non-humanoid aliens, right? Copperhead, the town, doesn't, like, it's not on Earth. There are some very obvious, like, Western tropes and, like, sheriff small town tropes at play here, but the entire story is plopped down in the middle of an outpost on another planet, a mining town, right? And so we're really translating, like I said in the intro, we're translating this idea of Wild West to space. Not a brand new concept, but one that, like, I really want to talk about why that works or what has to be in place in order for that to work.
Okay. You start me off then.
Well, I think Copperheads is a really good example of why that translation is successful. But we haven't talked about this book before.
Like, no, we haven't, but it's only 5 issues in.
I know, but, like, even casually, like, we haven't talked about it on the show. Sure, this is the first time that we're doing that. But even casually, you and I haven't really chatted much about this. And I've been reading it from the beginning, and I know that you have. And so sometimes, Aaron, we don't actually talk about comics because we're busy and stuff. We only talk about it on the show.
That
is true.
So I, like,
want to start from the very beginning because I don't even know how you feel about this book.
No, I like it a lot.
Okay, but give me more than that. What is appealing about it to you?
But that's, I think what's appealing about this book to me, it's such a non-answer. It's well written. The characters are compelling. There is a backstory that, you know, it has all the elements of a serialized story that are somewhat formulaic in order to keep you, you know, interested in seeing how it plays out.
Okay, so that is a total non-answer, and that's, you know, that's not at all what I wanted. I want to know why this combination of elements is working. Like, not every space western works. Sometimes they're stupid. Sometimes they're missing something essential. I want to kind of boil it down. Like, what has to be there? Why is this working so well?
You know, what has to be there? Like, the difference between, like, a Firefly and, I don't know, the problem is with, like, with things that don't work, you don't remember them. But, like, say, a TV show. Let's take Firefly. Why was Firefly, even though it was a failure, a cult hit? Because of the characters.
Okay.
Right? Like, Westerns or space Westerns, like, the sci-fi elements can take you somewhere, but but the characters themselves and getting attached or identifying or just becoming emotionally invested in their journey is what makes any story compelling and something you want to keep, you know, continue to read.
Do you think that it's also the characters have the opportunity to truly be, like, unfettered because of the Wild West aspect? Like,
I think that's a lot of the fascination with the Wild West, quote unquote, because, you know, it still stems from, like, samurai stories.
Okay.
And the Ronin and, like, traveling the countryside and away from the established order of society, you know, the lawlessness or sort of like the kind of the rough edges of society is a lot of like what Westerns deal with, right?
Sure, sure.
You know, revenge or taking the law into your own hands or in a land where the law is kind of a suggestion rather than a rule.
And then you bring in a character who is supposed to reestablish the law or reestablish the order, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that struggle or that conflict of empowerment in an area that rewards power in a different way.
Yeah, the rule of law is only as strong as the person enforcing it.
Okay.
Not
okay.
The bonds of society.
So you have to have a character and you have to have a compelling enough environment that lawlessness is fleshed out a little bit. Like, there, I think the threats have to come from more than one place. So, like, in Firefly, the threats, because they were actually constantly traveling, the threats could cycle through and be, like, planet-specific or space-specific. But in Copperhead, like, Clara and her son have relocated there. So we have to have threats kind of within the established order, and then threats outside of that too.
Sure.
So we've got the...
But you also have... Yes, they're settled down somewhere, but you're still in a setting where you can get on a spaceship and go to a different planet. Just like you can get in a wagon and go to a different town, or get on the train and go to a different town.
Oh, okay. So it's not... Yeah, I see what you mean. I agree. It's settled, but inherently unsettled. Like, it's...
And the external threats are kind of from any direction. Like, you, especially in this, you get more of a sense of what the natives, who would be the allegory for, you know, Native Americans in any kind of Western setting.
So I want to talk a little bit about that too, but finish what you were saying.
But that's always that threat of the other, or sort of, you know, settling in an area is such a weird term.
It's, yeah.
Because it's really conquering an area.
Yep.
Because, right, I mean, there are people there already. You know, we didn't settle the West.
Right, and there are implications. The West was settled. Absolutely. There's implications in Copperhead about the previous wars and, like, who was on what side fighting. I mean, Firefly does that too, right? Like, mm-hmm. who was fighting whom? And there's a reference to the treaty with the natives in issue 5 of Copperhead. So they're not... so unapproachably savage or non-humanoid that communication is impossible.
Right.
Do you think that there is a direct, like, allegorical translation of character type from Western America to, like, space Western?
I think so, yes. Yeah. The only one... that I think is harder to kind of say this is this person is the android.
Okay.
Bounty hunter guy.
I had this conversation earlier this morning with Conrad, and so that's why I was curious what your thoughts were specifically about the artificial human.
Other than he's sort of the allegory for, you know, the, you could say the Indian War, you know, soldier, the man who's been to war and come back and now runs as a bounty hunter, sort of in this in-between life.
And also, perhaps, with a group that was more, that had a more established relationship with the settlers. Or, you know, there's all sorts of stories about soldiers or warriors who were, like, of both worlds, right? Mm-hmm. They were half-breeds. So then they're not accepted by either. They live on the outskirts, but they are, you know, have mastery of communication with both groups. Mm-hmm. I feel like he kind of has the potential to live in that middle area. And I have to say there's like danger there of getting into kind of like the magical spirit guide realm that can be a very offensive trope that we're not there yet. And I think that that's why, because it's not a direct character type for character type translation. Like, I think that we're sort of successfully avoiding some of the danger zones with like Western stories.
Yeah.
But I think...
And you can also separate it somewhat from the American settling of the West by placing it on a different planet and making the natives seem... or natives to be literally, you know, alien to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why when you referenced, like, samurai... like, I understand that there are similarities in story origin between Westerns and, like, traveling the West, settling the West, and, like, this, like, the journey story. But I think that the similarities between that and, like, the Ronin samurai stories in, like, Asian culture. But I don't think that Copperhead borrows as much from that as it does from American Western.
Agreed. I'm just kind of looking at the lineage and the evolution of these stories. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think this plays more into our next book more than it does in this one, maybe?
Yes, because it's much of a broader story. I guess, sure. Like, by nature, it's more epic.
Mm-hmm.
There's something very comforting about the smallness of Copperhead's story, even though it's... in space. Do you know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like, it's Clara's story with a thus far small cast of characters that I have no doubt will continue to expand, but I think that's why it feels like small frontier sheriff.
Yeah, it's not East of West where you have epic, kind of, you know, massive, expansive storytelling.
Sure.
Personalized, small character studies with laser guns and aliens is always good. Let's talk about our next book.
Oh, is it, I mean, is it one that you're familiar with? Did you know anything about it going into it?
I barely heard of it before this, but I caught up a little bit. Cool. I can talk about it.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll muddle through.
Sure.
Another favorite series of mine is Zero, written by Alish Kott, with the colors from Jordi Belair, letters by Clayton Coles, and design by Tom Muller. Each issue of the book is by a different artist, and that's part of the huge appeal of the series for me, as in addition to his many other skills as a writer, Kott has a great talent as a curator of artists. The book's about an agent in a clandestine agency, and the twist is that it focuses on what it would actually be like to be trained from a young age to be one of these ruthless agents. What would that do to the humanity of the people that are the agents and the people who train them? And the book pushes you to think critically about our military-industrial terror state, and it asks you uncomfortable questions. Of course, it's also an incredibly compelling story about Agent Edward Zero, and it's told in an interesting non-linear way. And the art choices are really fantastic, as it feels like each artist is the right choice for the issue that they're illustrating. So it's a great series.
Our second book this week is Star Wars Number 1, written by Jason Aaron and drawn by John Cassaday. Colors are by Laura Martin and letters are by Chris Eliopoulos. Star Wars is now published by Marvel Comics. Again.
Oh, that's true, I guess.
Published by Marvel Comics for the first time again.
Yes. So, Star Wars, huh?
Yeah, as a slight review side of this.
Careful, or I'll edit you out.
Well, let's see. Let's see how this goes. I wasn't as crazy for a new Star Wars books as I think the rest of the internet was hyped to be.
Like, that's just sort of your subjective, like, thoughts about this going into it. That's not a review.
Okay, good. Well, see, I'm not a reviewer, so I'm not sure what constitutes one or not.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't unexcited, but it wasn't like, oh my god, a Marvel Star Wars, this is gonna be amazing.
Is Star Wars, like, your bag, or is... I mean, I feel like Star Trek is more your thing, but...
No, I like Star Wars and Star Trek equally.
Equally? Really?
Okay. I was talking to our mutual friend Cameron Williams earlier about this, though. I would say I don't tend to care much or look, you know, I seek out anything like books or comics or, you know, any extended universe, any even like the TV shows, that sort of thing. Like with Star Wars, for me, it's just the core movies that I really care about.
Like the three?
I mean, and the first three.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's part of Lucas's story.
When you said core, that's all I was clarifying.
I mean, for me, yes, you know, 4, 5, and 6, because that's what I grew up with.
Right.
But 1, 2, and 3, you know, quality or issues aside, it is still the first part of the story, and, you know, you go from there.
So is Star Wars a space western?
Yes.
Why?
It's actually a space samurai movie.
Okay, tell me why.
Because Lucas based it around the Hidden Fortress.
Okay, Aaron, how this works is, now you give me actual information.
That is information.
But talk me through it so that I understand what you mean.
Okay, The Hidden Fortress is a classic samurai movie.
Okay.
And I would say The Hidden Fortress is also very much the hero's journey, which is what, you know, Luke discovering his past, his powers, and who he is the hero. It's the hero's quest and the hero's journey played out in a galaxy far, far away.
Okay.
So, you know, all the Jedi stuff, all of that is very different than Star Trek. Star Trek is science and exploration.
Okay.
Star Wars is samurais pitted, you know, samurais, Ronin versus samurais and a shogun.
I only mentioned Star Trek because I actually thought that if you had to draw a line in the sand, that you would be on the Star Trek side. I have no interest in talking about, you know, one versus the other. And Star Trek doesn't have any relevancy to anything else that we're discussing right now, except it also takes place in space.
Yeah, so. I love both of them. I would say Star Trek for me is more important. And was more important to, like, my sci-fi upbringing.
Right. That's all I was saying.
Okay. But I still love Star Wars.
That you can love them both. It's like,
but I still
when
do.
We come back from Pittsburgh and Avi's all sad because he doesn't know how to reconcile loving California and loving Pittsburgh, you can have both things, Aaron Myers. It's fine. Right now we're talking about Star Wars, though.
Okay, let's talk about it.
So when you said, let's talk about Star Wars and Copperhead, because Star Wars is a space western, my reaction was, oh, it is? Because it just doesn't feel like that for me. Or the movies don't feel like that for me. They feel much bigger. They feel much more epic. And I think that part of that is the lack of intimacy, like that we were just hitting on with Copperhead. And even with Firefly, small ensemble, and we're focused on their journey and their story. And Star Wars just feels bigger. Space opera, sure. Space western, not so much.
I would say it is not a pure space western, but the core story, the A story of Luke, or even go back to Anakin. The A story of Anakin becoming Vader, having the babies, going then to Luke's story. That feels very much the same sort of tropes. Like Luke growing up in a very isolated small town, you know, or wasteland, basically the West, you know, the prairie, you know, the adopted son of moisture farmers.
right.
You know, that is, and then finding the old man who takes him into town. You know, they meet the smuggler who will take him to where they need to go, and then he learns, you know, skills, how to shoot a six shooter, basically.
Okay, so like the first movie, and then this leads into like the first comic that ostensibly we're discussing today at some point. All of that, I can see the relationship between that and some of the way that the structure of a Western or a samurai film would be. Like that, the hero's journey, I get that. When we start bringing in the perspectives of the Empire and we start looking at the larger battle between the rebels and the Empire is when it loses that like kind of personal connection for me. And I want to make it super clear that I am a Star Wars fan of all three movies that I grew up with, less so of the first three, just because I just, you know, like I don't know them as well. They weren't as close to me when I was younger. But the comic, I felt, had a lot more in common with that kind of roguish, like, small band just fucking around that I want in a space western. So, like, I'm super on board with the first movie, or, you know, episode 4, and this comic where it exists, like, right after that, taking place in this world of discovery, but we're, like, on the small band hero journey as well. Like, we don't have to have the bigger perspective right now. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, no, it does. I feel like this first issue, like, is how I felt, like, about Brian Wood's run, which I ended up really liking. But at first, it was more like a, okay.
Why? Is it because you know it so well?
I guess I don't. It goes back to that sort of irrational sort of, I don't really want more fill in on what happens in between the films.
So you were talking to Cam about this, weren't you?
No. I've talked to him about this, but
because that was
we had the same conversation about the Dark Horse one.
Yeah. So you can enjoy the story and you can appreciate the story, but it's not a necessary story.
Yes, yes. And I think that is important for a book like this because its primary consumption is the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the comic will never have the same weight to it. Like it doesn't matter what happens in this run of comics. They can still be enjoyable stories, but it's not sequential storytelling going towards the conclusion of this tale to something we have no idea what's going to, you know, what brings us down the road.
Like, does that bother you?
Kind of, because you already know a lot of factors already. You know Chewbacca's not going to die. You know Han's not going to die. You know Leia, you know none of the principal players have any sort of stakes upon them. None of the perils are matter.
How is that different from like any Marvel intellectual property?
Because in theory, the story isn't written yet. Anything can happen. you know, I can still suspend disbelief. Like, Wolverine dies. You know, in theory, they could never bring him back. He'll be back, but right now, he's dead.
Professor X hasn't come back.
Kinda.
Well, I mean, not... Right, okay.
But that's fine, because it's not like Uncanny Avengers number 50 is already been published, and now we just never got Uncanny Avengers 25 through 50.
Right.
If that makes sense.
No, it does. It does.
You know?
I think
right now we're getting Star Wars
way.
Number 1, but Star Wars 25 is Empire Strikes Back, and we've already seen that.
In your own way, you are being very specific about what I feel like is missing with the story, and that's the intimacy of it unfolding. Because we already know what the end point
Correct.
Is.
Yeah.
So, that doesn't mean that we can't enjoy it.
No, it's true.
And
it's just
it
I won't enjoy it as much.
It was super fun. And it was super fun, especially being able to hear the characters so accurately. Just, like I could hear their voices so well because of the movies. But it is a very different experience from reading something like Copperhead.
Well, yeah, because Copperhead, we don't know what's going to happen.
Right. This is me agreeing with you, Aaron.
I'm just so used to being defensive with you.
You are. It's like your default tone with me is to get defensive. Just like my default tone with you is to be super passive aggressive.
Yeah, well, that's why I mess with a working model. When it works, it works.
You know who I think is going to absolutely love Star Wars number 1?
Who?
Avi.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It should come today for him, and I cannot wait for him to read it. Because he is really entrenched in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unlike your description of the movies as a sequential story and this fitting in between, he has a totally different perspective as a consumer of like all of the other media about Star Wars that has been out since then, and like picking it apart bits and pieces here and there. He sees it as just like a giant world to play in.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
This fits in a very different way for him.
I mean, think of things now versus like when we were kids. It's like you couldn't play it. There was the Star Wars video game was for Atari, and it was, you know, either like I didn't have an Atari, we couldn't afford one, and it wasn't the same experience as playing any of the Star Wars games you could play now. So you can't, you couldn't immerse yourself in the same world.
But
read
also there
some
are so many stories and yeah, like but like the novels when we were kids, I think skewed a little older.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of stuff for younger kids now. There's Clone Wars and there's, you know, other access points for the Star Wars universe. So in a way, it has like the epic feel of diving into like another Marvel or DC character.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's what is appealing to him. And because he knows episode 4 most recently, I think that this book will just, like, be kind of right in his wheelhouse.
He also hasn't watched episode 4 150 times.
Exactly. And has not yet seen the rest of them.
Yeah, so that's perfect. Like, that would be the ideal way to do it. It just doesn't matter as much to us.
Right.
And especially, that's why it's just a personal opinion. Like, for me, the 4, 5, and 6 are the movies I saw the most as a kid. And it just became kind of like, that's Star Wars to me. The rest just didn't really, like, feel like Star Wars. Because I couldn't break out of what I had established as, this is the Star Wars story. The rest of this is, like, fan fiction. You know, it just didn't make sense in the world. But if I was a kid now, it's like, oh my God, Star Wars, there's a million things of Star Wars. How do I consume it all?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
so I think that that's what makes it not as Western-y for me. It's too big. It's too big. It's actually, like, the frontier is too large. That's and I know fun. That sounds stupid because we're talking about fucking space, but the journey is too grand and the paths are too many compared to some of the other examples that we threw out.
I think that's fair.
Subjectivity for the win.
Yeah, just to me, the Western aspects are just go back to what I consider to be Star Wars for me. And that part of it is the small kind of group. You know, it's the small band of the heroes, and it's mostly Luke's story.
Mm-hmm.
That bring those aspects around for me. The larger universe part is sort of ancillary in a lot. But that's just my personal exposure to, you know, to the franchise. Sure.
And certainly the scope of the story in this first issue was, like, it had a very Firefly feel to it. That's hilariously derivative, right? Because there's no way that you could point to Firefly and say that it doesn't have... like, a lot of Star Wars influence, but then when you look at this one and say that it, you know, reminds you of, it's like the inception of Star Wars, and, I need to stop overthinking it. But you know what I mean. It's that small story of, like, this band of guys together for the first bit of their relationship is where I think we can have a lot of fun with it.
It's true. Hey, I'm fine. Fun is fun.
Yeah, fun is fun.
Yeah,
I've had anything else fun?
I've had fun talking to you, but
nah,
I think the fun is over.
Fair enough.
For 1 week. I also blame you that we don't have a guest this week.
That is super unfair.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we just have a temporary postponement of our guest this week, but he'll be back.
Sure.
You don't have to be a jerk about it.
I'm not. I'm just being a jerk to you about it. I'm not blaming the guest. I'm blaming you.
Oh, well, you know, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Are you done now?
Somebody's busy working.
Yes. I've been working really hard, Aaron. Like a grown-up.
Good. Welcome to the working world. Thanks. Not fun.
And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of Comics Therapy. Don't forget to pre-order your comics at your local shop and subscribe to them digitally. Show notes and other details are on our site, as always, comicstherapy.com. See you next week.
See you next week.
Halcyon, from Image Comics, I do seem to be talking about them a lot, is written by Mark Guggenheim and Tara Butters, with illustration by Ryan Bodenheim and colors by Mark Englert. I think when this first came out a few years back, it was a little under the radar, but I love it. It takes place in a universe where there are superheroes, and they're pretty clearly analogs for Marvel and DC heroes. The crime rate drops dramatically worldwide, and as part of the exploration of the story is why that happens and what happens to the heroes essentially when the fight for a better world is over. What happens to them? It also, the story explores ideas of free will and whether peace is valid if it's enforced externally, and other interesting ideas in addition to just being an engaging superhero story. The art from Bodenheim and Englert is really fantastic. There's great costume design and action, and the lettering and overall design in the book is first rate. It's a 5-issue miniseries, though the way it's set up, if they wanted to, they could tell more stories in that universe.
There is a young cowboy who lives on the range. His horse and his cattle are his only companions. He works in the saddle and he sleeps in the canyons. waiting for summer, his pastures to change. And as the moon rises, he sits by his fire, thinking about women and glasses of beer, and closing his eyes as the dogies retire. He sings out a song which is soft but it's clear, as if maybe someone could hear. Good night, you moonlight ladies, rock-a-bye, sweet baby Jane. Deep greens and blues are the colors I choose. Won't you let me go down in my dreams and rock-a-bye, sweet.